Brother Joel has asked for the evangelist at Cedar Ridge. Brother Joel Osborne has asked for us to pray for their endeavors to move the Cedar Ridge Church to somewhere in Auburn. So they're in the process of looking for that. But that's what they would like to do. So let's keep that in prayer too. Before I begin the message, I want to read a little bit from my book on Inspired by Evidence. I can find them when I want. Have you ever seen an owl? I think they're fascinating birds, don't you? Owls. Fun to watch. Debbie sometimes and I, when we've been on our walks, I think we saw an owl on the barred owl on the Olympic Trail. And just sitting up in a tree, just looking all around and that. But this is about owls. The feather of an owl is not like other birds' feathers. Other birds produce feathers with straight, crisp edges. I didn't know that either. An owl's flight feathers have fringes at the edges. The owl also has a notch on one of its flight feathers. Didn't know that either. Both the notch and the fringes provide the owl with a noiseless flight. It allows them to fly without making any noise. Of course, when you're a predator bird, that's an important thing. In fact, an owl is one of nature's stealthiest hunters. Its prey is often unaware it is about to die until it's too late. Question. What do computers and owls have in common? Computers need fans to keep them cool. Yet fans are noisy. What to do? That was the question posed to a group of computer engineers. This is what I found fascinating. What was the question posed to a group of computer engineers? One of the engineers noticed an owl flying without making any noise. He wondered why. He saw it flying through the woods, but could not hear a whisper of moving air as it whooshed down upon its prey. The owl did not make any noise as it moved air around. And that computer engineer thought, aha, here's what we'll do. Copy the owl feather. Thus, quieter computer cooling fans were created based on the design of the owl's feathers. Isn't that marvelous? They looked at that, one of the Lord's creatures, and they designed that. Didn't come about by chance. This computer engineer observed an owl, and he got the idea for that. Amazing how those things can happen. Well, I think so anyway. Okay. It's still Tuesday as we're journeying through the Gospel of Mark. It's still Tuesday of the Passover week. It's still early April. Still the same day. There's a lot going on in this one day. In early April of 30 AD. And Jesus, he's still in that temple area with the apostles. And I imagine, but probably what he is doing is teaching them and doing other things. And the Sanhedrin, what we read about last week. The Sanhedrin, the religious leaders, they're going to continue to pester Jesus with questions throughout that day. Now this morning we come to the second question that is put before him. Remember the first question we dealt with last week? It was a question that he didn't answer. Well, he didn't answer directly. He answered indirectly. And now they come back again with a second question put before him. So let's look at the text and see what we can learn from it. Now for reference, if you want to, you can note the parallel passages. Erase this here. During that whole day, Jesus spends in the temple. So the parallel passage is found in Matthew chapter 22, verses 15 through 22, Luke 20 through 26 are the parallel passages for this text. If you want to refer to that. So let's look at the text this morning and see what it says. In Mark chapter 12, a few short verses that we're going to deal with. 13 through 17. Then they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to him in order to trap him in a statement. They came and said to him, "Teacher, Rabbi, teacher, we know that you are truthful and defer to no one, for you are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful to pay a poll tax to Caesar or not?" Second question of the day to Jesus. "Shall we pay or shall we not pay?" But he, knowing their hypocrisy, said to them, "Why are you testing me? Bring me a denarius to look at." They brought one. And he said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And they said to him, "Caesar's." And Jesus said to them, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And they were amazed at him. So let's unpack this. You know, I love music. And this text reminds me of the song written by Don Henley and Glenn Frey. Performed by their group, the Eagles. Especially their song that they wrote, Don Henley and Glenn Frey, performed by the Eagles, "Lion Eyes." Now, the context of that song is vastly different, but it reminds me of that, especially the refrain. The refrain or chorus of that song goes this way. "You can't hide your lion eyes. And your smile is a thin disguise. I thought by now you'd realize there ain't no way to hide your lying eyes. This text reminds me of that. Lying eyes. I was debating about what the title of my message this morning, either to pay or not to pay, or lying eyes. Both fit. So some Pharisees, let's look at this in this way at the text. Some Pharisees, a group of men, it doesn't tell us how many, and that's really immaterial. But a group of men, some Pharisees and Herodians, are sent to Jesus by the Sanhedrin. Now, this suggests some questions to ask ourselves. Well, why the Pharisees and Herodians? Why did the Sanhedrin do this? See, the Sanhedrin this time, the guys in the Sanhedrin, the men in the Sanhedrin, they didn't come to Jesus. Remember what happened to them of that first question. They wanted to trap him, catch him in the catch-22 there. They weren't successful. So now what do? Well, they get a bright idea. This is the same day now. You imagine they went back and said, we weren't able to catch him out. We weren't able to get him. But somehow we've got to get him. And you can imagine them thinking, well, here's what we're going to do. You Pharisees and Herodians, you guys, you go to him. And you ask him a question. And you can imagine they're around one another and they're discussing, well, what can we ask him? So they send some Pharisees and Herodians. Why the Pharisees and Herodians? The Pharisees and Herodians do not really like each other. In fact, they detest one another. They have an intense animosity between them. What gives here? The Sanhedrin sends them. Does this kind of night remind you what has been happening for a number of months now in our Congress? Was that Jeff? Theater, yeah. Soviet style trials, what it is. But you have people together, politicians on both sides of the aisle, that really can't stand one another, but they have a common enemy. So for now, we're going to let all those things go so we can see if we can get rid of this person. See, the same thing going on today. It's what Jesus had going on. What gives is this. The Pharisees and Herodians did not like one another, had an intense animosity between themselves, but yet they come together for this. Why? Because both the Pharisees and the Herodians hated Jesus. They didn't like him. That was their common enemy. Kind of like certain group politicians today have a common enemy. Who we know who is. And they want to get rid of him. But these men want Jesus dead. So for the present, what they do is they're going to put their hatred aside. Because they both have a desire to get rid of Jesus. And in fact, as I said, They want him dead.
So what is their aim?
The text tells us exactly what it is. You read verse 13. Then they, that's the Sanhedrin, sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to him in order to trap him in a statement. That's their aim. The Sanhedrin's thinking, we didn't get him this time, but now we're going to send these guys and they'll get him. They'll trap him. The word that is used here for trap is used only here in the New Testament. But in the classical Greek, it was a common word. It was used for the catching or hunting of wild animals. That's what they're thinking about Jesus. So next we notice how they begin to speak to Jesus. You can't hide your lion eyes, and your smile is a thin disguise. Notice how they deal with Jesus. They came, these Pharisees and Herodians, and said to him, Teacher, we know that you are truthful and defer to no one, for you are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. Stop there, see, before we get to the question. Why are they doing what they're doing? You can imagine them. They're around Jesus just as Don Henley and Glenn Frey wrote in that song. You can imagine they're around Jesus and they're smiling at him. And they're saying what they are and what they're saying. That's how they begin. How do they begin with the Lord? They begin with flattery. They compliment Jesus. See, they think this is going to catch him off guard if they flatter him. Trying to deceive him with their words and indeed with their lying eyes. See, they compliment Jesus in four ways. First, they say, Teacher, Rabbi, we know. Rabbi, teacher. What a compliment. And then, you know what they do next? They point to his integrity. That's what this is. What they do, they point to his integrity. We know that you're truthful. We know that you are truthful and defer to no one. We know you're impartial. That's what they're saying. You're not partial to any. You're truthful. You're honest. You're not partial to anyone. And then they say the last compliment. You teach the way of God in truth. They think that they're gonna, like I said, catch him off guard. Hey, let us compliment him. We'll do that right off the bat. Then we'll ask him our question. Because you see, since we've told them, called him teacher, and we pointed to his integrity. We told him that he speaks the truth. He teaches the way of God in truth, and he doesn't show any partiality. Well, then he's going to have to answer our question, since he's all those things. Now, there's a strong paradox here, however. These men, these Pharisees and Herodians, do not really believe what they're saying. They don't believe any of it. How do we know that? Because if they did, they would be following him, would they not? And here's the paradox of it all. They say these things about Jesus and to Jesus and about him, and they don't believe any of it. Yet every single thing they compliment him on, everything they say say about him, is true. It is true. But they don't believe it. But yet they're saying it. Again, those lying eyes. But you see, those lying eyes and their smile did not deceive Jesus. You know the old saying, flattery will get you everywhere? Not with Jesus. Not with the Lord. Now here comes the question. And they really believe that Jesus must either answer yes or no. No equivocation. Well, of course he wouldn't, because he's impartial and he tells the truth and he teaches the way of God in truth. So of course he's not. So they say, is it lawful to pay a poll tax to Caesar or not? Shall we pay or shall we not pay? There's a question. And here's what they think Jesus' dilemma is. If he answers yes, he's going to upset most of the Jews, because the Jews didn't like paying taxes to begin with, especially the poll tax, especially those taxes levied by the Romans, who they were under subjection to. If he answers no, and you can imagine that there's Roman soldiers around there. If he answers no, then it will appear what? Why, it will appear that he's taking a stand against the Roman Empire. If he would say no. No, you don't have to pay poll tax. You don't have to pay that tax to the Romans. He could have said that. So that's the question stated. Pretty simple and straightforward, isn't it? Pay taxes or don't pay taxes? Now, this was not the matter of the temple tax. This was not the temple tax that every Jewish male paid. Remember the example of Peter? And the Lord's response? Peter came to Jesus and said that we need to pay the temple tax. And the Lord tells him, you go catch this fish. And in that fish's mouth, you'll find enough to pay for both me and you. Because he and Peter were the only ones old enough to pay that. And what is the Lord's response? Pay the temple tax. But this is not the temple tax. This was called the poll tax or the head tax. This was demanded by the Romans.
It wasn't that you could or you couldn't. It was demanded by the Romans. All Judean males from the age of 14 to 65 had to pay that head tax or poll tax. All Judean women from the age of 12 to 65 had to pay that poll tax or head tax. One denarius. And they had to pay it yearly. What was that for? That was for the privilege of living. The privilege of existing. Because if you were a male from 12 to 65, Judean male, not all the Jews, but if you were a Judean male from the age of 12 to 65, you had to pay that one denarius every year. A female, 14 to 65 for male, 12 to 65 for females. Had to pay that yearly. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. All non-Roman citizens who were under subjection to Rome, under the province of Rome, had to do that. Now, the Roman Empire covered a whole lot of territory, but only Judea was under the direct Roman rule since 6 AD. Jesus was not really involved in this tax because he was from Galilee. Only the Judeans, because they were under the subjection of Rome directly, under direct rule. The other provinces were not. They were ruled by the Herods. Judea was not. And the reason why Judea was not, because in 6 AD, there was a zealot, and that's where they came up with the zealot party. There was a zealot who came along in 6 AD and decided he was going to rebel against the Romans. And the Romans came in and they crushed that rebellion. But when they crushed that rebellion, they brought in what is known as a procurator, one who would oversee the area, one who would bring in the Roman army so that these people would do what the Roman Empire said. So that's what they did. So thus they would have had to pay this tax. So these men believe they've got Jesus nailed. If he says yes, they win. If he said no, they win. Well, one group wins and the other group wins. But in essence, they believe they both win. Either way, because they're going to get rid of them that way. But now we see the Lord's response. Those lion eyes and smiles cannot fool him. They cannot fool the Lord. Notice what he first says to them. You hypocrites. He knows they don't know, mean anything by what they called him. What they said he was. What he was about. What he was like. They know. They don't really believe him. So that's why he says what he does. But he, knowing their hypocrisy, why are you testing me? Why are you trying to trap me, is what he's saying. You would think that, see, that all this time, they would already know they can't do that. And now notice what the Lord says next. bring me a denarius to look at. Bring me a denarius. Now, isn't it interesting that they bring him one? So someone in that group of Pharisees and Herodians had to have a denarius, which is what they used to pay the head tax or poll tax. It was a Roman coin. A denarius was worth about, was a day's wage. And it was worth about 16 and two-thirds cents. So one is brought to him. Doesn't say who it does. Doesn't tell where it came from. That's immaterial. But the next thing to me, and you, I don't know about you, but in looking at this, I found it rather humorous. Because it said to bring a denarius to look at. And he does look at it. You can imagine. The denarius is brought to him. And he looks at the coin before he looks at them. He looks at the coin and then he turns it over. And he looks at that. As if he had never seen one before. But he has. He knew what was on it. Again, ask yourself a question. Why is he doing this? I believe it's because he's playing these men like fish bait. Like trying to hook a fish. Like baiting a hook for fish. I think that's what he's doing. And then the Lord asks. And you imagine him holding it up. Whose icon? Whose image? Now, some translations say picture, but that's not technically correct. It's image, he says. Whose icon is on it? That leads us to ask this question. Who's doing the catching or trapping now? You see, that coin has an inscription on it. The inscription on the coin was Tiberius Caesar Augustus, son of the divine Augustus. And then you turn the coin over, and on the back, the words were Most High Prince. Divine. Augustus is. He said, whose icon? Whose image is there? And the men answered them, Caesar. Jesus then says what we next find in the text here. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Now you can imagine these Pharisees and Herodians. I mean, they're all agog. You can imagine the delight in their eyes. Because in effect, he's saying yes. Pay the tax. You can imagine them thinking, aha, we got him. Let's go tell the Sanhedrin. We got him. He said yes. Not so fast. Not so fast. Later on, just right after that, Jesus says, what? Render to Caesar's what is Caesar's. And render to God what is God. Yes or no question? Totally yes on both sides. But they didn't expect that last one. Because he then tells them, in effect, give to God what is God's. Just imagine their reaction then. Did you know, if you remember your scriptures and what happens later on during the week, specifically on Friday, that later on, and it's recorded for us in Luke chapter 20 through 23, verse 2, that these same people, these same group of men, are going to lie. Remember what Jesus said? Render to Caesar what is Caesar's. Yes, pay the tax. Luke 23, verse 2. Beginning with verse 1, it says, then the whole body of them got up and brought them before Pilate. That's Sanhedrin. And these group of men. And they began to accuse him, saying, we found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. Forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar? Is that what Jesus said just a couple of days before on Tuesday? It wasn't, was it? Lying eyes. Of course, they didn't get Jesus. So here's how we need to look at this. Let's bring it back down to brass tacks in closing. First, what Jesus is saying. And this is not have nothing to do, as far as the church is concerned, or our people in the church is concerned, with tithing. That's not what he's talking about. The first way we need to look at this is this way. It is right to pay taxes. What Paul tells us, teaches us in Romans chapter 13, and what we find in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 17, is that God put government in place. He instituted government. That's what Jesus is telling them. Caesar is the emperor. Yes, you pay this tax. You're required to. So it's lawful to do so. Like my brother R.C. Foster said concerning that, human governments are ordained of God in the sense that he wills law and order to prevail. The innocent to be protected, think about that today, the wicked to be prevented from destroying all that is noblest and best. Think about that for as far as today is concerned and what we're reading here in our text. But here's the point, the second thing. The point really has to do here with who is over all things. Who is over everyone? See, that's what Jesus is bringing down brass tacks to them when he says what he does. God, or put it this way, the state is not God. Man is not God. When Jesus said, whose icon, whose image is on the coin? He tells them that the image there, why, it represents Tiberius Caesar, the present emperor of Rome. But also, he's trying to get them to think of this. What does it tell us in Genesis chapter 1, 27? Man is made in the what? In the image of God. In the icon of God. So he says, render to God then what is God. What he's saying to them is this. Your ultimate loyalty and our ultimate loyalty is to him. Not the state. not man, but to him. And that's what he's saying. He is telling them that on the coin, yes, that image is of Caesar. Caesar is a living man, yes. And he represents a total empire. But you also are image bearers. And God is over all. I like what Brother Paul McReynolds said. This means that there can never be equality between God and the state. That means between God and the government. Because God is the state's source of authority and is superior to it. That's why you can imagine the apostles remembered this whenever they were brought before the Sanhedrin and they were told, shut up about Jesus. And they said, as for you, whether it is right to obey God or not, you decide. But as far as we are concerned, we will obey God rather than men. See, and that's what it comes down to today for us as well here and what Jesus is saying. When it comes right down to it, to brass tacks, yes, we are to do things our government says. Within boundaries. But we should pay taxes and so forth. But when it comes to the state or the government infringing upon our beliefs in God and our loyalty to Him, then we must stand up against that. In our world today, so much would like us and those in are involved in the state as such would like us to bow to them ultimately. Any state, even our own government, when it comes down to it, what their desire is, it's not just power. But we see this happening all around us, that what they want is they want everybody from the womb to the tomb to control all that. And the scriptures tell us, no, you don't. God tells us what the purpose for government is, tells us what our purpose is as far as how we are to interact and deal with those with government. But he also tells us that ultimately he is in control. And if what the state wants and what the state does is contrary to him, then what he wants overrides what any state might want, what any government might want. That's what Jesus is teaching them. They didn't like that. But they went away amazed because of what he said. They didn't catch him, did they? Nope. But many people are still striving to do the same thing with Jesus today. See? But you cannot fool the Lord. None of us can. No one can. Let's stand. We're going to sing. He paid it all. Jesus paid it. See? You talking about taxes? You talking about payment? He paid it all. Why? Because we were made in His image. And He loves us so much that He did that.